It was true love. The kind of love that happens only in movies or songs or dreams, until it happens to you. A blinding, magical love so all-consuming that you would surrender everything to remain under its spell. A love so deep that you gladly give up parts of yourself in the service of another. A love that, should you lose it, will forever break your heart. This was the love that had come at long last to Peter Eichen. At 62, he had been retired for 8 years from a storied career in the music business, lastly as the senior vice president of marketing and artist development at Warner Music International. Known in the business as PI, he was a Sydney-based Australian music impresario who commanded respect and inspired friendship from the many artists whose careers he had helped guide to glory. A long list that included Elton John, Rod Stewart, George Harrison, members of the Eagles, and many more superstars in his 30-year career, all the while living what one friend called a rock star life. Now he had settled into a world of leisure, filled with adoring friends, international travel, and homes in New York, London, and Sydney, the last being his main domicile. He had an estate worth an estimated £20 million, with bank accounts in Channel Island tax havens like the Isle of Man. But he never had someone to spend his enviable life with. Until the spring of 2008, when a former beau, Alexandra Depailler, came roaring back into his world. They had met at a Warner International Music Festival in San Francisco 20 years earlier, introduced by Claude Nobbs, the founder and manager of the Montreux Jazz Festival. Nobbs was an elegant and successful music promoter. He had been so taken with Alexandra that he hired him as a junior technician and flew him to America. Back then, Peter Eichen was 41 and Alexandra 19, a beautiful boy from the Paris suburbs, dreaming of becoming a singer. He and Peter had a fling in San Francisco, and then Peter flew him to London where they had a brief relationship. Now Alexandra had shown up out of the blue in Sydney. They hadn't seen each other for many years. Alexandra called his former lover to meet him at a tech conference he was attending to represent his company, Lex Inc. At 39, Alexandra was still devastatingly handsome. His chief assistant, a young Frenchman named Jeremy, snapped a picture of them at that joyous first day back together, outside the Sydney Convention Center on Darling Harbor. Alexandra was in a blue shirt and blue sports jacket, his right arm slung around Peter, the big, charismatic, always impeccably dressed music legend who called his friends darling and had collected too many darlings to count. Peter's smile glowed in a broad, can-you-fucking-believe-my-luck expression beneath his dark sunglasses and spiky blonde hair. "My life has gone completely topsy-turvy in the past few weeks," he emailed a friend soon after. Writing about the return of his French beau, who openly tells people he is my boyfriend, Peter felt blessed. Tears had been shed by them, both sides, he wrote, of the special bond between them. From there, it was a whirlwind of fun. Long lunches, candlelit dinners, romantic outings, and dizzy nights, all the while talking about the long and winding road that had finally reunited them. Then home to bed with hot kisses and a soft hug, as Alexandra liked to say. Within a week or two, they had moved in together, sharing Peter's sunny penthouse in Elizabeth Bay, a fashionable Sydney suburb. And at night, when they were in each other's arms, Peter felt content. "The hardest thing for me is sharing the bed after all these years, as so used to sleeping alone," he wrote in an email on May 15, 2008. It was like watching someone fall in love for the first time, the Australian actor Simon Burke later told the Sydney Morning Herald. There was more, which Alexandra, ever humble, eventually let slip. His company was no mere startup. It was a colossus, a multinational IT and telecommunications giant. Lex Inc. had offices worldwide, staffed by thousands of employees with untold reserves of cash. The Mexican tycoon Carlos Slim wanted to purchase just some of Lexing's tech for $8 billion, and Alexandra's enormous circle of business friends included Steve Jobs. The company produced social networking software and hosted servers for video streaming for mobile phones, most of which, I can confess, was way above my pay grade to understand. Crediting his enormous success all to Peter Eichen, Alexandra described it as a mythic journey, like something straight out of The Great Gatsby. After falling hopelessly in love with Peter so many years ago and being inspired by his success, Alexandra had determined to prove himself by making his fortune, which he had now done beyond his wildest dreams. We have always shared a very special bond based on love and trust, and now he is very successful. I didn't know how successful. Eichen emailed a friend. He wasn't merely talking millions, but billions. Alexandra's wealth delighted Peter, who was always on red alert for opportunists and fortune hunters. Alexandra had his own money, he thought, so he isn't going to go after mine. The proof was in the pictures. Alexandra striding purposefully through Central Park on his way to work, Eichen wrote. Alexandra on the roof of one of his vast Manhattan apartments in the storied 15 Central Park West, the Robert A.M. Stern-designed monolith home to such stars as Denzel Washington and Sting. A few weeks after Alexandra's arrival in Sydney, Peter's longtime friend, Brian Flaherty, accompanied the happy couple to dinner. Alexandra was charming, intelligent, and friendly, speaking perfect English, in which he told his Only in America story of becoming a billionaire in such a few short years. While living in Beverly Hills, he had been adopted by a wealthy widow who financed him and helped him set up his business, which had enabled him to purchase residential properties in the world's most elite neighborhoods, including 5 apartments in Manhattan, along with homes in Beverly Hills and 2 apartments in Paris. The multiple residencies were required for his hectic schedule, Alexandra added, which included juggling enterprises in his far-flung global offices between which he flew in private jets. He would soon leave Sydney for Tokyo, he said, to visit his Japanese office. He was also in talks with Telstra, the Australian telecommunications giant, pondering a joint venture that would involve moving 60 of his U.S. employees and their families to Australia for 6 months. As Brian Flaherty watched the blissful couple disappear into the night, he was filled with happiness over their obvious love for each other. "You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray," Peter would write to Alexandra on a birthday card, especially poignant considering Peter Eichen's illustrious music career. "You'll never know, dear, how much I love you. I need your sunshine every day. Love always and everlasting, Peter." Then suddenly, an ominous cloud appeared on the horizon. A few days after their dinner, Peter visited Brian Flaherty in tears. Alexandra, Peter said, was dying. He had 2 rapidly growing, inoperable brain tumors and only weeks to live. He wanted to spend whatever time he had left with Peter, whom he asked to accompany him to New York, so they could live together for the few precious days until he took his final breath. Alexandra had sworn him to secrecy about his illness so as not to compromise his companies, Peter would tell a friend. And the terrible news, coupled with the secrecy, was wrenching for Peter Eichen. Kind, giving, big-hearted Peter Eichen, who was always there to help others. He had lost his own family, his parents, but found the promise of a new one in Alexandra, only to have it suddenly snatched away. Alexandra wanted a commitment, and of course, Peter gave him one. He had hoped to have at least a few years left to spend with his young love, but Alexandra was going downhill and only had weeks to live, according to his doctors, Peter told friends. Now Alexandra wanted to spend his final days and breathe his last breath with the only man he had truly ever loved. "He came down here primarily to see me and said after 20 years he is ready and waiting no longer, as he's only ever truly loved me, so I do want to share my life with him, as he does with me," Peter wrote to a friend. To celebrate the anniversary of their first meeting, Alexandra wanted to give Peter 50% of his enormous IT company. To formalize it as a legal transaction, he proposed that they exchange $50,000 checks with the agreement that neither would cash the checks until they were living together in New York. Not long after that, Alexandra gave Peter Eichen yet another gift. He not only wanted to spend his last days with Peter, he wanted to bequeath him the rest of his fortune and leave him his extraordinary business to run as president and CEO. After his next seizure, the brilliant, beautiful Alexandra would probably be a vegetable, Peter agonized. To ensure that the funds would flow smoothly, Alexandra wanted to create a joint bank account with Peter at his bank in Jersey, the tax haven off the coast of France, and Peter called his banker there to see if there was any limit to the amount that could be transferred. "It was all getting a bit too much for me," Peter wrote in another email, adding that Alexandra wanted him to run his company, "which has major difficulties for me being an Aussie in the U.S., even if I don't take a salary, and his real estate is much bigger than I ever thought, with both residential, 5 in New York, 3 in L.A. and 2 in Paris, and commercial properties in many states of the U.S., plus Canada and Japan. Just don't know how I am going to cope, but don't want to let him down." Day was night and night was day. Peter Eichen's heart had overpowered his head, blinding him to everything but devotion. The situation worsened by the day. "Soon Alexandra began losing his memory," Peter told a friend. He had tried to phone his parents, whom he had forgotten were dead. He sometimes couldn't remember what country he was in. He suffered violent convulsions and crying jags. And at night, those dark, agonizing nights with death so near, he just wanted to be held, because of the pain, said Eichen. Peter's days as a bon vivant were over. Now he was a caregiver. All of his energies were spent on Alexandra, and would be, he vowed, until his lover's final passing. All this left Peter Eichen an emotional wreck, unable to sleep due to the stress and because Alexandra and his assistant Jeremy were up all night managing Alexandra's global business. When friends called, Peter asked them to meet him anywhere but his house so as not to disturb the creative genius upstairs. "Say some prayers for Alex when you can," Peter would eventually write in an email. "I don't want him to suffer anymore and just to go peacefully. Then there are all the after arrangements to sort out, and him being a foreign national, dual French and USA citizenship, I expect some local difficulties here. Looking at him in the attached pic taken last week, you would not know there was anything wrong with him. Just so sad and cruel." Yet Alexandra didn't die. The spring of 2008 passed in a blur. May turned to June, and then it was July. Peter left for the U.S., then London. In August, the end was allegedly near, with terrible seizures and episodes of dementia. Alexandra would say that he had been in Mexico, flown there on a private jet owned by his friend Carlos Slim, the Mexican billionaire and one of the richest men in the world. "His brain tumors are alarmingly big, and unless the pressure diminishes, his episodes will become more violent and more frequent." A mysterious woman, purportedly one of Alexandra's assistants or caregivers, who may or may not have existed, emailed Peter Eichen about his beloved's worsening health condition. "The specialists cautioned against surgery," she wrote, "which would come with the possibility of not emerging from anesthesia or of becoming a vegetable. And Alexandra was fighting hard to stay lucid. Sometimes he is sharp as a tack and focuses on work," the caregiver wrote, "but other times he is in the far distant past, crying. It's like a child is playing with the light switch, on off, 50 times a day, interspersed with moments of great physical pain that morphine cannot ease. Last night he thought I was his mother, and I almost lost it." She added that, "Even without his memories, Alex still knows he loves you," and thanked Peter Eichen for everything you've done and do for Alex. "It goes beyond love. I hope you can see him soon. At this point, Alexandra did not want to see or speak with Peter, and Alexandra's assistant, Jeremy, would tell Peter he didn't know his whereabouts. Why? Perhaps Alexandra believed that being unavailable would make Peter desire him even more. When Jeremy asked Alexandra for the reason, Jeremy would later say that he was not well enough, but he wanted to rest some more. In any case, Peter was desperate for news of the health of his new love. But Alexandra did not want to be found. He wasn't being treated courtesy of Carlos Slim in Mexico, or convalescing at the Sultan of Brunei's estate in Spain, as he had told Peter. He was in a modest house just outside of London, staying with Jeremy and Millie. Peter began anxiously calling Jeremy, and with Alexandra often standing right next to him during these calls, to check what I said, Jeremy later reported, he felt forced to pretend he did not know where Alexandra was. Peter would tell me he was worried about Alex, and I would say, I was too, he recalled. Soon, Alexandra was ready to resume his relationship with Peter, and not merely in love. He wanted to make their bond legal. Peter shared this glorious news with only a few friends, that Alex's dying wish was that we be married. And so, after the paperwork was done, the date was set, Friday, October 10th at 10:30 a.m. in the old Chelsea Town Hall Registry Office for a civil union ceremony, allowed in the UK between same-sex couples. There was more to this than love. Alexandra said he was determined to shield his fortune from his two older brothers, who he described as greedy, and who by French law could be entitled to 10% of his estate, which would be many millions. Alexandra wanted Peter to have it all, which required they formalize their union in a wedding quickly because Alexandra had been told by his doctors that he would most likely not live to see his 40th birthday on October 8th. With one I do, Peter Eichen's net worth would blossom by such measure that his own hard-earned fortune would seem like peanuts. He would inherit everything, even if those brothers tried to get their share. Of course, he and Alexandra would need to set up joint bank accounts so that the billions from the sale of part of the company would be his, personally, and wouldn't go through the company's books. Regarding their wills, Alexandra had an easy solution for that, too. His existing will has been destroyed, Eichen wrote in an email to a friend, and he wants me to cancel my Australian-based will, which doesn't mention him, and do a new one here. I am not sure about all this, and go through the motions of putting at least Cheney Place, Eichen's central London apartment, in their joint names. Love might have been the trap, but money was the bait. So much money that even wealthy Peter Eichen was impressed. What a story the young man spun, such a perfect story. A story that would convince Peter Eichen. And Peter Eichen was nobody's fool, one of his friends would later say. When somebody is saying beautiful things to you, you tend to believe it. And Peter Eichen undoubtedly believed. He would formalize this belief on Friday, October 10th, 2008. On that day, he and Alexandra Despalières would be married in a civil ceremony at the old Chelsea Town Hall. It would be a quickie ceremony witnessed by Jeremy and by Peter's friend of 20 years, Anne-Marie Nicol. No jokes, please, about who is wearing the dress, Eichen mused in telling the select few about the wedding, which he had, for the most part, kept secret. The ceremony would be both simple and life-changing for both of these men. We got up in the morning, we got dressed up, we went to the city hall, Jeremy would later say. The happy couple exchanged brief vows, kissed and toasted their new life together. Then they set forth on what everyone expected to be a short and precious life together, before Alexandra left Peter Eichen a bereft but very wealthy widower. It was, Alexandra would later say, the most beautiful day of Peter Eichen's life.